Meeting will please come to order if everyone would take your seats. I apologize that we started just a little bit late today. We had a kind of a last minute need to get a little amendment copied, but I think we're all set to go here. And the first order of business would be to hopefully to approve the minutes of the last meeting. Do we have a motion to approve the minutes of January 16th? Representative Mack moves to approve the minutes of January 16th. Is there any discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? The minutes are approved. Thank you. Okay, the first bill, the bill on the agenda is House File 9. Representative Huntley is here to present his bill, and Representative Huntley moves that House File 9 be recommended to pass and referred to the House and Health and Human Service Finance Committee.
Right.
Okay. And Representative Huntley, you have just a technical amendment, I understand.
There's a technical amendment. It's the A1, and it simply changes a couple of words. It's completely technical. And so I would make that motion that we approve that amendment, the
okay.
A1 amendment.
Representative Huntley moves the adoption of the amendment coded A1. Any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
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 All opposed? Okay, the amendment is adopted. We have the bill before us in the order in which the author would like. And Representative Huntley, go ahead and please present your bill.
Madam Chair and members, this is a bill that expands medical assistance to 138% of poverty. There's a little discussion whether it's 133 or 138, and they're sort of used interchangeably, and that's because in the federal law, they disregard 5% of the person's income to start with. So it's 138% then. So what this does, this bill does two things. One is it expands medical assistance to 133% of poverty for parents and childless adults, and it also expands for children up to 275% of poverty. And the reason is we already cover people on medical kids up to 275% of poverty on medical assistance, or excuse me, on Minnesota Care. So this is an attempt then to get the feds to pay part of that. Right now they're paying on the kids that are eligible for medical assistance, they're paying up to 150%. We pay 50%, they pay 50%. I'll get in more detail into that, but the other thing this does is there are some changes in the federal law that relate to medical assistance, which means we have to change our part of our laws to adapt to that, and that is one, how you define income. And the new federal guideline says that it changes the way they look at earned income, that's basically an accounting thing. And let me find the right word here. They use a modified adjusted gross income, which is one thing. Secondly, we have to do that because that's how the feds are going to pay us for medical assistance. And they also use a different standard for tax returns and IRS rules that relate to Medicaid eligibility. So that's in this bill, but the probably the more significant thing is increasing MA eligibility from 75% of poverty to 138% of poverty. And I've handed out some sheets that, if I can find them, this one and this one. Let me talk about this one first. This shows you what our current eligibility is for MA based on income and what this bill would change that to. For those that don't know, the feds are now allowing us to go to 138% of poverty if we choose. The Supreme Court said that the federal government could not mandate that we do that, but they have allowed states to, so we have to vote on that if we want to do that. The second sheet, probably more important, that's this one. It shows the total cost and total savings, and there's an intermix. A lot of the people that are on medical, on Minnesota Care right now will now be eligible for medical assistance. And so that means that the feds will be paying for that group that are on Minnesota Care right now, the feds will pay 100% of their medical assistance rate. We also have a group of people that are currently on medical assistance, adults without kids, up to 75% of poverty. The feds are currently paying 50%. In 2014, they'll pay 100% of that. So the net changes to the state budget, if you look at both Minnesota Care or the Health Care Access Fund and the General Fund Medical Assistance, is a net savings in the first biennium of $117 million, and in the second biennium, a net savings to the state of $141 million. So this change actually saves the state a lot of money. In addition to that, we're going to have about 54,000 people getting coverage through the system, some of which are in Minnesota Care, some of which aren't insured right now. And many of you have heard me talk about uncompensated care, but if people don't have insurance, they go to the emergency room, and it's an emergency, they have to be treated, and the hospital doesn't get paid in most cases. So what does the hospital do? They raise the rates to everybody else, and so we're paying for a big chunk of those people that don't have insurance right now. That's not included in the savings on this sheet. That's something separate. And in fact, if you want to know the numbers, family health insurance policy is probably about $15,000, and about $1,000 of that goes to uncompensated care. So we're already paying a significant amount for people who don't have insurance. And so this bill will actually save us a little bit more than the actual numbers in the state budget. So as I said, it's a little over... a little bit less than $300 million over the 4 years. And I'd be happy to answer any questions. And we do have a lot of people to testify.
Okay, Representative Abler.
Just a couple questions to the bill, and then I'll be happy to hear the testimony. Just in terms of your presentation, do you know how many new people that have nothing, that have no coverage, or that are currently uncovered, are going to come here because of this?
Representative Huntley.
Madam Chair and Representative Abler, what I've shown you is not an official fiscal note.
Right.
This is just from the governor's budget, and that may change by next Tuesday when it goes to the Finance Committee. So the only thing I really do know is about 54,000 people will be added to medical assistance. Yeah. What percentage of those were already on Minnesota Care? And what percentage were uninsured, I don't have the number yet.
All right, and maybe if one of the testifiers knows that, Madam Chair, it would be helpful. And I just have two more questions. Can you just clarify, just to help me understand this, if we don't do anything, if we just don't pass this bill and January of 2014 comes, and the 0 to 75%, do we lose the federal match in that group?
Representative Huntley.
Uh, I think we would get the match for the 75%.
All right.
But I don't know. We have a fiscal analyst here.
Well, that's we'll ask that question later. And
yeah, Representative Aber, please go through the chair.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry.
Hi,
Chair. I know the feeling. just one other question that I'll be done. But these are meant to be just friendly questions. I understand the value of it, and I like a lot of the things about it. But one thing that concerns me is our capacity to cover this.
Madam Chair, and Representative Aber, I've just been informed that the feds will not cover the 100% of the 75% unless we go all the way to 138.
Representative Aber.
So that means we're stuck at 50% of the...
Yeah.
Okay, we don't lose money. Anyway, so one of my overarching concerns on a lot of these federally funded programs is that they might find themselves unable to pay, and that we talked about this in a friendly conversation. And if I worked on some language about allowing us to opt out of this, if the whole world collapses and they quit paying their federal share, we could work on that, couldn't we, Representative Huntley?
I'd be happy to accept an amendment that did that if the feds don't pay. I think they will continue to pay, but if they don't, we can't afford to expand it this much, I don't think so.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That's all I have.
Okay. I have Representative Grunhagen on the list. If it's brief, Representative Grunhagen, we have a lot of testifiers, and there'll be a lot of opportunity later on as well. Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Huntley, my understanding on the bill is there isn't a residency clause as far as being a citizen of the state of Minnesota, and there's not an asset test. Is that correct?
The asset test is has been banned. You know, it's not, the federal law says there can't be an asset test. And as far as the residency,
Mr. Chun, I think, could address that. Mr. Chun.
Madam Chair and members, because this is an MA expansion, the MA residency requirements would apply, and this is sort of an intentional residency requirement where you demonstrate an intent to remain in the state. So it's not a durational residency requirement.
Thank you. Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. I'll make this quick. So does it concern you that without an asset test, and I didn't hear the residency answer clearly, is there a residency clause or not?
Mr. Chun.
Madam Chair, Representative Grunhagen, there is a residency requirement, and it's a residency requirement that's tied to a medical assistance program where you demonstrate an intent to reside in the state.
Intent.
And I think there's also, yes.
An intent to...
Representative Grunhagen.
Madam Chair, an intent to reside, right, versus actually residing. Okay. So then my other quick question is, Madam Chair, is that does it concern you, Representative Huntley, if, we've got like 25 states, some say more, that don't want to implement the ACA, and then you have other states that do want to, that will become a magnet for people to come here with the expansion of MA, no asset test, intent to be residency, that we might actually draw people into our state to sign up for these programs and therefore swell our enrollment? And then if the federal government, which I don't have much faith that they're going to stick to their promises financially, they move us every 2 months from one cliff to the next, does that draw you pause at least in terms of this type of expansion?
Representative Huntley.
Not at all. We passed Medicare and Medicaid in 1965, and the feds have never not paid the bill to to both those programs. So I think that they will fund it. I'm not concerned that they won't, but if they don't, then we'll have Abler's amendment to say that we'll stop the expansion.
And Madam Chair.
Okay, Representative Grunhagen, could we go? We have a list of testifiers. I think perhaps some of the questions you might actually want to address to them, and we'll have opportunity. Representative Huntley is not going anywhere, and after, I hope he isn't anyway, And after we get through some testifiers, then I think they'll be it will be a better time to ask a lot more questions. So, Representative Huntley, did you have more to say before we go to the
just one thing. I also passed out a statement from Jan Brewer, the governor of Arizona, who is somewhat to the conservative side, and she is expanding MA in Arizona, or is supporting that. So, but I just soon have the people testify.
Okay, thank you, Representative Huntley. And before we go on, I just want to state for the record that a quorum is present, which I neglected to do at the beginning. And our first testifier on the list is Commissioner Jessen. Welcome to the committee. It's a historic day. We're glad to have you here, and please introduce yourself.
Madam Chair, members, I'm Lucinda Jessen. I'm Commissioner of the Department of Human Services. Madam Chair, members, it is great to be here. It's great to be here on this day, and on this day with so much support for the expansion of Medicaid to cover single adults. Up to, we talk about this 138,000, 138%, but that means $15,000 a year. So that's people who really do not earn very much money at all. You know, historically, our Medicaid program, you know, at the federal level has said, we'll cover pockets of people. We'll cover children. We'll cover pregnant women. We'll cover seniors. But they left out single adults. And I think finally they've once again learned things from our state of Minnesota, because we have been covering this population for many years. We covered it through our GAMC program. We've covered it through our Minnesota Care program. And we do that because we thought it made sense. But now with the Affordable Care Act, the federal government has said, we too will, if the states ask, provide coverage, and as an incentive, we will pay 100% of the cost of those single adults up to that $15,000 a year. For the 100% for the first 3 years, it goes down to about 90% thereafter. You know, and from our perspective of the department and for the governor, this is good for people. It's better coverage. It's good for our state, for the savings that Representative Huntley just alluded to. It's good for providers. We don't have hospital caps, and so it's better for them as well. So I think overall this is just an excellent bill, and I so strongly support it. I do want to clarify a couple of things that came up in the questions earlier, if I may, Madam Chair.
Please.
Our analysis is that the impact of this will be to increase people on MA by 87,000. So we'll have 87,000 more people on our medical assistance program as a result of the Medicaid expansion. Now, the reason this saves us money is because 53,000 of those are already on Minnesota Care today. So it's a program where we're already paying 50% of the cost for most of the people, and instead of none of the cost for 3 years and then only 10% of the cost thereafter. And I think that's, frankly, a reason why our state's in a different position than some of the other states that have examined this. Other states may look out and say, well, in 3 years we have to start paying 10%. We're like, we're paying 50% now. But as I said, this is not just about the state budget. This really is about what's better for people. And when I say there are 53,000 that are in Minnesota Care today, this also means that there are about 34,000 people who don't have insurance at all and who will be on this program. And that gets to, it's better for those people, and it's also better for the uncompensated care issues that really plague our system today. So I just... happy to answer questions. Oh, Madam Chair, if I may, one other thing on the state share issue that Representative Abler raised. Just, you know, to reiterate, our research as well, and this is not something that CMS has given absolute guidance on. We've had conversations with them. Could you, and as have other states, could you do the Medicaid expansion up to something less than 138% of the poverty level? I think the answer is you can, but you're not going to get the 100% match. So if we leave things as they are, then we're covering single adults through our MA program up to 75% of the poverty level, about $8,000 a year. But we'll still continue to pay half of those costs instead of none of those costs for 3 years. So thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members. And I apologize for my voice. I hope I was somewhat understandable.
Yeah, thank you, Commissioner. We do have a question from Representative Mack.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to get a little clarification on some of the numbers, Representative Huntley, earlier you thought 54,000 were going to be added to MA. And I'm just wondering, for clarification on that, Representative or Commissioner, you mentioned 87,000. Just wondering, looking for confirmation on that.
Commissioner Jessen.
Our estimates, and we have a lot of experts here who I'm sure would correct me if I was wrong, but is that it is an 87,000 is what we predict. These are forecasts. These are predictions. I think probably some of the confusion is drawn from the fact that, you know, I said 53,000. Representative Huntley said 54,000. That's a number that refers to the people who are on Minnesota Care today in that population. So it doesn't include the others that we predict because of the requirements to do away with the asset tests, and probably the fact of having an insurance mandate will join the program.
And Commissioner, I have a question for you as well. We're talking about taking people who are currently on Minnesota Care and moving them to medical assistance, our state's Medicaid program. And my question would be, if you were one of those individuals, what difference would you see? Since this isn't the Finance Committee, this is the Policy Committee, I'm interested in knowing what difference does it make in terms of the health care that they could receive?
Madam Chair, that's a very good question. I think the coverage, our Medicaid benefit package is a little better than our benefit package on Minnesota Care today. And especially when you're looking at, you know, people who make $15,000 a year or less, having those broader benefits, you know, is very important to them. The lack of a hospital cap, also very important, not just for providers, but for people. If you think about it, if you go into a hospital and you stay maybe 2 days, you're over that $10,000 hospital cap. And that's medical debt that can plague you for years and years.
Okay. Thank you, Commissioner. Representative Grunhagen has another question.
Yeah, as I mentioned, I have to leave, Chair, Madam Chair, so I'd just like to get this question yet before I go. thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner Jessen, what about that intent to reside clause, which is a federal requirement on the expansion? Do you believe that will could cause us to be a magnet from other states that maybe refuse to implement or don't implement the expansion such as we are, that people would actually come here to sign up for those benefits because we have that expansion?
Commissioner Jessen.
Madam Chair, Representative Grunhagen, let me first say that the residency requirements, we have a residency had a residency requirement in you know, Minnesota Care, and you know, when we asked for and received additional federal funding, kind of federal match on that, the feds are very clear we had to not, you know, have that residency requirement. So this having the residency requirement, this intent to reside, is the most the federal government will let us do. So I just want to point that out first. I don't think we have any options in that regard if we want to run our Medicaid for our Medicaid program. I think, Representative, that I don't think we will end up as a magnet. We have, you know, one of the things the federal law is going to do is bring some uniformity, you know, to the Medicaid program, at least at the lower levels. So you're going to see that, you know, a number of states that weren't providing the coverage that we do today are going to now be providing the coverage. So, in fact, I think actually the Medicaid expansion, because more states are going to take it than states who weren't providing as good a coverage as we were in the past, I think they will have actually more comparable choices for people. So I think that concern is much less of a concern after 2014 than it was, you know, 3 years ago when we were clearly providing much better benefits than many other states.
Okay. Thank you, Commissioner. And Representative Mack had a follow-up question. Sorry, I didn't catch you before.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just clarification on the Minnesota Care issue. I know one big question and concern that many of us have is what happens when that waiver expires at the end of this year for Minnesota Care. And so if 53,000 are going to be moving to Medicaid, how many does that leave in the Minnesota care population that are currently being covered, won't be covered under the Medicaid expansion. How big of a pool is left there?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Representative Mack, that's a very good question. I, as you know, I'm very concerned as well about what happens for the population really between 138, above 138 that are on our Minnesota Care Program today. You know, I think there are two issues. You know, one, if we assume, as Representative Huntley laid out, that the children in that population are moved to Medicaid, which we think we have to do, so how many single parents and single adults are between 138 and 200% of the poverty level, for an example? Well, there are a lot of people in that population that are eligible for Minnesota Care. Fewer that are on Minnesota Care today. My recollection, that I will get back to you with the precise numbers because this is just my memory, is we have about 33,000 kind of adults in that population. But I can't recall exactly if I'm going from 150 or 138% of the poverty level, so I'll get back with you to you with more specifics. I think part of the point is there's a lot more people than that that are eligible, and that we believe once there's a mandate, we'd be turning to Minnesota Care. So we have to think about that as well.
Okay. Representative Mack? Okay. All right. Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Commissioner. I think this is a good step forward, and I always like to remind people that when we say single adults, it just really means people without children currently at home. Oftentimes, they're empty nesters. They're not all pre-nesters. On Minnesota Care, what we found was a lot of people were women in their 50s who work in retail, who suddenly discover a lump in their breast or some other health issue that suddenly forces them into health care, seeking health care, and it's the only option that's available to them. So it really is across that whole spectrum, and I think sometimes we kind of stereotype when we hear those words. But one of my concerns is that we always make health and human services so complicated, and the feds join us in that partnership. And in the discussion and in the handouts, we use 133% and 138% back and forth. And I know that it's about that 5% disregard, but if you could, in your smart staff, think about whether or not we could just put 138% in statute and not have to acknowledge that the old disregards turn into a new 5% disregard. I just think the more that we're consistent with the language that's being used in the federal discussion and that is really the practical implement rate, it would be helpful. And so I'm not asking you to take a position on that, but I just think if you could get together with your really good staff about these details, it would make it so much easier for us to understand the system going further forward, because we are, even just in this discussion, going back and forth between the two numbers.
Okay. All right. Other questions for the commissioner? All right. Thank you very much, Commissioner Jessen, and we will... are you able to hang around for a little longer?
Madam Chair, yes, I'll be here.
Great. Terrific. Okay, thank you. Next on the list, we have Mary Krinke from the Minnesota Hospital Association. Okay, welcome to the committee, and Ms. Krinke, we're thinking that we're going to go with maybe 4 minutes per witness. If I don't know how much time you think you might need, but we hope you can
do it fast. That.
Okay, please introduce yourself for the record.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Mary Krinke, and I'm with the Minnesota Hospital Association. We represent 144 hospitals statewide and a number of healthcare systems as well. Not always does the Hospital Association agree unanimously on legislation, and Representative Huntley knows that in the past with issues, but the Hospital Association strongly and unanimously supports this legislation. We came out early in support of the 75% expansion that was done 2 years ago, and our members are very supportive of this change as well. I just want to comment and don't want to repeat what Commissioner Justin said, but Chairman Liebling, you asked a very good question. How is this different for the individuals, for the patients. And I would just like to say that when you have Medicaid coverage, we believe that you will change over time your behavior versus always coming into the hospital emergency room to seek your care. When you have coverage, you're more likely to be able to get an appointment with a clinic, a physician. You'll be able to get your prescription drugs that you need. It will, in the long run, we believe, reduce the utilization in the hospital emergency room. So we believe it will be better for the patients. Also, it enables to have the individual to have access to the full range of the Medicaid benefits. So it's good for the individual. Clearly, from the provider perspective, as was mentioned before, we do believe it will reduce uncompensated care, and that $10,000 inpatient annual cap that has been in the Minnesota Care program, as you can imagine, it doesn't take more than a couple days in the hospital. So the hospitals around our state, when they care for people in the Minnesota Care program, have long been losing money on that coverage. Now, please understand, we support that coverage because it's better than being uninsured, but I do think it's important just to note that it will be better for both providers as well as the patients. I just have one other comment that I'd like to make, and I'm sorry Representative Grünhagen had to leave, but I know there have been concerns in the past about, well, are we just expanding the Medicaid program, and do things have to stay the same? And I just would like to say that we now have five of our hospital systems who have signed up with the Department of Human Services to be healthcare delivery demonstration projects. We are working on reform and how we're going to deliver care differently and payment systems that are differently. So just because someone is enrolled into the Medicaid program, it doesn't mean that services have to be delivered exactly as they have been in the past. So this does not mean that we have to have just fee-for-service. We can start paying based on quality. It doesn't have to be just on volume. So this doesn't preclude us from doing other changes and other reform. It merely says for very low-income people who make less than $15,000 a year, we're going to guarantee they have some coverage. So, Madam Chair, with that, we're very appreciative that you're doing this hearing early in the legislative process. We think it does have budget implications moving forward with the rest of the legislative session. So we're very anxious to get this passed and moving. So thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Krinke. Questions from members? Okay. Seeing none, thank you.
Thank you.
The next witness on the list is Christina Wessel from the Minnesota Council of Nonprofits. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Christina Wessel, and I'm the Deputy Director of the Minnesota Budget Project. We're an initiative of the Minnesota Council of Nonprofits. And the Minnesota Budget Project does research, analysis, and advocacy on tax and budget issues, looking particularly at how they impact low and moderate income families here in Minnesota. And I want to thank you for this opportunity to testify in favor of House File 9 to expand eligibility for Medicaid. The Affordable Care Act, as it was originally passed, required this expansion. Unfortunately, the Supreme Court decision last summer made it optional. However, taking this action is not only an essential step in meeting the goals of the Affordable Care Act to reduce uninsurance, but it also has great advantages for the state budget, for healthcare providers, and for Minnesota families. Some of these I'll talk a little bit more briefly about since they've been touched on before, but House File 9 will save the state money. By expanding Medicaid to cover nearly all adults, we'll be drawing down hundreds of million dollars of federal money. And although the bill itself doesn't have a fiscal note yet, we see from the governor's package in his budget that it does save the state $117 million in the 14-15 biennium. We also know that House File 9 will mean fewer unpaid health care bills. As Mary Quickie just talked about, people need health care, whether they have insurance or not. And many doctors and hospitals treat patients who do not have insurance knowing that they will not get paid. The cost for these unpaid bills gets passed on to the rest of us. Expanding Medicaid and increasing the number of people with insurance will reduce that uncompensated care and will help hopefully control costs for everybody in the system. We know that House File 9 will also remove barriers that currently keep people from enrolling in Medicaid. Some of the individuals we expect will benefit from this expansion and these changes may be eligible right now, but there are barriers to keep them from enrolling. For example, as required by the Affordable Care Act, this bill will allow very low-income families that are trying to build assets to still be eligible for Medicaid. This is extremely important because research shows that increasing savings is a critical step for a family to build the security they need to move out of poverty. Otherwise, they are constantly living a financial, you know, a disaster away from financial crisis. Eliminating the asset test for most people in Medicaid will be a big step in helping families move towards self-sufficiency in our state. And we know that it's going to improve health outcomes. Many of the individuals who become eligible for Medicaid may have access to insurance through MinnesotaCare right now, however they can't afford the premiums, or they find that the limited benefit set doesn't meet their needs. Expanding Medicaid will mean more affordable and comprehensive care for Minnesotans that will translate into better health outcomes and hopefully also help us to work on reducing our health disparities in our state. But I think it's also important to think about what happens if we don't expand Medicaid here. What are the options that are available for folks? First, we know that these low-income individuals currently qualify for MinnesotaCare, but the future of MinnesotaCare is in doubt, and that's an issue that I know will come before this committee as well yet this session. Because MinnesotaCare, as we have it right now, doesn't meet a lot of the higher standards, and in addition, we expect to lose federal funding, we're going to have to make some serious changes in order to preserve MinnesotaCare. So we cannot count on MinnesotaCare right now as an option available for these individuals. And we know that private insurance through the exchange is not affordable for these people. Although they will be eligible for premium and cost-sharing subsidies, if you look at a family budget for Minnesotans at this income level, they have no income left after paying for essentials like food, housing, transportation, and childcare. They are likely to choose a health plan in the exchange where they have to pay zero premium. However, they get very high cost sharing. And so even though they may, quote unquote, have insurance, they are unable to use it because they are unable to pay their own share of the insurance. Let's also remember that when the Affordable Care Act was passed, federal lawmakers assumed that very low-income individuals would qualify for Medicaid because the expansion was originally mandatory. So those individuals below 100% of poverty do not qualify for tax credits and cost-sharing subsidies. So if we do not expand Medicaid, particularly for adults without children, if Medicaid is not there for them, there isn't anything else there for them. So I really appreciate your time this afternoon, and I hope that we will move forward with fully taking advantage of this opportunity to cover more low-income Minnesotans under Medicaid and avoid pushing our state backward when it comes to comprehensive health insurance for our low-income families. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions from members? Okay. Seeing none, thank you very much for your testimony. Bob Meaches from Minnesota Medical Association. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record. Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Bob Meaches. I'm a physician trained in internal medicine and geriatrics, but I'm here today as the chief executive of the Minnesota Medical Association. The Medical Association is a professional association of more than 10,000 physicians and physicians in training throughout Minnesota. I'm pleased to offer strong support from the Medical Association for House File 9, which would expand medical assistance program up to 138% of the poverty level, consistent with the Affordable Care Act. We support it for three reasons. The first, and most importantly to physicians, and I hope to you, is that Medicaid coverage expansion for adults has been shown to improve health. It improves health. It reduces mortality, and it improves patient self-reported health status. Physicians who see these patients, low-income patients, frequently encounter folks with severe illness that could easily have been prevented or treated sooner if they had had coverage. And so we believe in and of itself it will improve health. Second, as it already been pointed out, Medicaid expansion is a smart financial decision for Minnesota taxpayers. As noted in the governor's budget analysis, the change will generate more than $1 billion in state savings over the next two biennia. And third, Medicaid expansion will help reduce the amount of uncompensated care that physicians, other health care providers, and hospitals experience. More is covered for a larger number of people at the right price. And so for those three reasons, we strongly urge you to pass House File 9. However, despite our support for this Medicaid expansion, we do have concerns, and we need to make them known. The long-term sustainability of medical assistance program requires the state to pay adequately for physician services and other services for medical assistance enrollees. Minnesota physicians have not had their fee-for-service rates changed for 13 years. They've been frozen. some rates have actually been cut. This inaction by the legislature sends a strong message to me and to my physician colleagues that their expertise and commitment to providing care to this population is not valued. As in fact, as reported just this morning by Commissioner Jessen, across the hall at the Senate committee, medical assistance fee-for-service payment rates for physicians in Minnesota is 47th out of 50 in the nation. We're not the best, we're the worst. And at the same time, physician participation is 96%. So physicians care about their patients, they want to serve, but they're not being compensated adequately. And so the Minnesota Medicaid pays most physicians 20% less than Medicare and a third less than commercial patients in general. Physicians cannot keep their doors open when it costs them to take care of patients. No enterprise can. We're pleased that the governor's budget put some additional money on the table for payment rates. We urge you to go further. If not, many more Minnesotans will have new Medicaid coverage when you pass this legislation, but many may not be able to find a physician who can afford to care for them. As physicians, we have a professional obligation to our patients and to the health of our communities. We support Medicaid's expansion, but the expansion has to go hand in hand with fair and adequate payment rates. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Meeches. And I'm sure you'll know that I say without bias that I think we have a very fine provider community in this state. And we appreciate the efforts and, you know, and although this isn't the Finance Committee, we are very aware of the squeeze that's been put on providers over the years. So thank you for that.
Thank you
for your testimony. Representative Abler.
Well, thank you. And thanks, Dr. Meeches, for coming again. And I only heard the last part of your comments. I was doing another meeting in the hallway. But please transmit to your members that the lack of payment that even meets your costs is not a sign of disrespect. And we're very happy that so many choose to invest their time and their good efforts on behalf of our million clients that we serve in this state. So, and I've been discussing this topic since I came, but it's not a sign of disrespect. I just wanted you to know that it's one of those hard things about trying to run a state budget. And but thank you for all your group's participation. It's really, really important.
What other questions from members? All right. Thank you, Dr. Meeches. Sarah Greenfield, take action. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members, Representative Huntley. My name is Sarah Greenfield. I'm the healthcare program manager at Take Action Minnesota, and I'm happy to testify in support of House File 9, and particularly want to thank Representative Huntley for his leadership on this incredibly important bill. It's a great day when this lineup of speakers can all come up and say the same thing. I'm pretty close. So I'll try to focus on just a couple of points. You know, in 2010, Minnesota continued our leadership, our history of leadership in healthcare coverage with Governor Dayton's early expansion of Medicaid, which, as has been mentioned, improved coverage for many Minnesotans, covered many new lives, and drew down already an additional estimated over $1 billion in federal dollars over the biennium. This offered to fully expand, to fund this full expansion up through, as we've said, 138% of the federal poverty level, and to improve the eligibility process for folks, and then cover it 90% thereafter. This is all really a sign that the federal government has recognized what Minnesota has long known. Comprehensive coverage for the very poor and for low-wage working adults is a win-win. It returns improved health and productivity and reduces uncompensated care costs, both for safety net providers and for all of us who buy insurance. In particular, I want to focus on the significant benefit to Minnesotans and especially those who would be covered under this expansion. We talk to folks all the time about their healthcare experience, and this expansion means more than just switching the funding stream for people who we already cover. Many in this new expansion population have had trouble enrolling because they couldn't find the right paperwork, didn't pass the asset test, missed renewal notices mailed to an old address or in a new language, or because they would have had to drop their existing high deductible coverage, which they can't actually afford to use, but felt too risky to go without it for several months in order to qualify for Minnesota Care. this Medicaid expansion and the eligibility changes, along with streamlined enrollment through a Minnesota insurance marketplace, will eliminate many of these barriers to coverage. It means increased coverage at a reduced cost for Minnesota, and most importantly, improved health for tens of thousands of Minnesotans. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Franson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is just mainly a comment, Ms. Greenfield. I see that Take Action Minnesota, one of your things on your website says to put people at the center of health care.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, the Affordable Care Act puts the federal government at the center of health care and not the person. So,
thank you.
Would you like to respond, Ms. Greenfield?
You don't certainly. Have to. No, I'd be happy to. Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. I disagree, but I think more importantly, here in Minnesota, we have an opportunity to decide how we implement the Affordable Care Act, and the decisions in front of us around Medicaid expansion, around the exchange, give us an opportunity to do that in such a way that we really do put people at the center and make sure that these policies are good for our state, and I hope that we do that.
Representative France.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Ms. Greenfield. Well, you know, and as I'm listening to this, all the comments that are being taken place and the chuckling on the other side of the table there, you know, the Affordable Care Act is not a bipartisan bill whatsoever. Not one Republican voted for this big, expansive takeover of health care. And I'm still wondering, what options do we have in Minnesota when we're talking about the Affordable Care Act? What are our options here? All I seem to be hearing is that the feds are going to tell us to do this, the feds tell us to do that, the feds won't do this, the feds won't do that. What flexibility does Minnesota have, and why, as state legislators, are we rubber stamping what the feds are imposing on us without regard to future funding? Talking about drawing down federal dollars, well, somebody has to pay for the Affordable Care Act. Federal dollars do not grow on trees. They actually come from hardworking Americans who are already struggling to put food on the table for their family. And now we are expecting hardworking Americans to pay for thousands and thousands of more entitlements. And $16 trillion in debt is what the federal government has. And I find it very hard to believe that the federal government is going to come and fulfill the obligations that it's promising the states with the Affordable Care Act. I mean, the debt limit crisis that we just had was a sign of things that were going to happen if the federal government were to default on its obligations. So just be careful as we move forward through this that we aren't making so many promises that will be under-delivered.
Well, thank you, Representative Franson. And I just would direct members to this statement from Governor Jan Brewer that was handed out by Representative Huntley, and that I had also emailed to members earlier. And I think it's important to note what she says here. And as many of you know, she's one of the most conservative governors around. And it was certainly was no fan of the Affordable Care Act. But she's implementing the Medicaid expansion in her state. And she says, saying no to this plan would not save these federal dollars from being spent or direct them to deficit reduction. No, Arizona's tax dollars would simply be passed to another state, generating jobs and providing health care for citizens in California, Colorado, Nevada, New Mexico, or any other expansion state. With this move, we will secure a federal revenue stream to cover the costs of the uninsured who already show up in our doctor's offices and emergency rooms, weigh the evidence, and do the math. And to this, I would add, Representative Franson, that Minnesota has long been at the short end of the stick when it comes to getting federal dollars. So our dollars that are paid by people in this state often go disproportionately to other places, interestingly, often to red states, or what we now call the red states. So I think, you know, this is an opportunity similar to what Governor Brewer is saying for us to get these dollars that would just simply be spent in other places. If there are no other questions, I think we can probably go to the next testifier.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Zerwas.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mrs. Greenfield. I guess the one question I have, and I've heard this a couple times over the last couple weeks, and it's, I can't quite wrap my head around it. We talk about the underinsured or uninsured that through just the difficulty and bureaucracy of signing up for Minnesota Care have been uninsured. And now, through this, they won't be. They'll be able to sign up. So I think my question is, and I'm not trying to be a smart aleck, but my question is, what fundamental structural changes, other than, you know, the expansion itself, will make the actual physical act for someone to sign up for this easier? Because we've heard about that before. So I think if you could elaborate a little bit on that, that would certainly help me.
Ms. Greenfield, if you want to respond, or we can get somebody from the department to respond if you don't feel
I'd be happy to respond briefly and then let somebody maybe with more details fill in. But thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Zuris. There are several things that are dealt with in this bill, and I think others that will be dealt with in the exchange bill and other areas. But the changes in some of the eligibility determination that were mentioned earlier, the elimination of the asset test, greatly streamlines the enrollment process and actually makes it possible to do through the exchange, whereas now we're largely on paper process that can take quite a bit of time for eligibility determination. So I would just say that's going to be main components that I think will change that process. And then also we have some considerations around what sort of additional outreach activities we're able to do through navigators and assisters, some of the other pieces provided for in the Affordable Care Act that can increase our current capacity to let people know about the coverage they qualify for. And then beyond that, I'd be happy to let, if there's another testifier.
Yeah, does anyone from DHS, Commissioner, do you want to add to that? Because I think there are some changes to the Medicaid program that actually are going to streamline and simplify, and I think some of those are in this bill. Commissioner Jessen.
Madam Chair, Representative, let me just list a few of the other things that I think will help with this. Ms. Greenfield mentioned the removal of the asset test, so that is a big piece. We also will have hospitals able to make presumptive eligibility programs for people who are showing up, in the emergency rooms so that we can get those people covered very quickly rather than a process that now takes us, sometimes 45 days just to do the enrollment. Without the asset test, it also makes that enrollment easier because you're not having to go verify everything. You're really counting on income, which is much easier to verify. Another thing is that people will be eligible for a year instead of having to kind of like re-enroll or re-show that they're eligible every 6 months. We lose a lot of people just because they don't have the time to just go do all of the paperwork hurdles every 6 months, so we lose people, from coverage at those 6 months, a lot of people. And then those are people who don't have coverage to go visit their primary care doctor, and then the next time we see them, sometimes they're in the emergency room, and then they go through the whole process again. So those are just a few of the things that we'll be using to really, those are some of the changes that will make it easier for people to get on and stay on Medicaid, assuming they're eligible. It's not, we're not going to double check their income, and do those sorts of things. So those are changes that will help. Having the exchange is kind of a way, part of the exchange that probably isn't talked about as much, but it is really a way of streamlining our eligibility enrollment decision-making so that people will be going on, and we believe that about 70% of the people who are eligible for public programs, they'll be able to go on, they'll enter their data. This is all data that has to be, sent in the mail and through paperwork and, today. So entered online, then that will be, their income will be verified, these IRS websites. And is that going to work for everybody? No. But because sometimes you're still going to have to, there are going to be red flags and you'll do the double checks. But for 70% of people, they'll be able to put their information in, have it verified online, and find out if they're eligible and enroll, instead of kind of the 45 or more day process. So I hope that answers the question.
Follow up from Representative Zuris. Yeah.
And thank you, Commissioner Justin. That does help. I guess one of my big concerns, and one of the things I'm nervous about as we look at implementation is in all reality, what's the likelihood of people in those income brackets, you know, at 78% of the federal poverty guideline, or 100%, or 138% of the federal poverty guidelines, sitting down at their computer at home and entering in wage information and household information. So I think it relies heavily on a large assistance infrastructure, and a large government infrastructure. But I think the idea that everyone is going to sit down at their computer and sign up is probably a misnomer. I think more likely what you also mentioned is kind of catching people at the back end, as they come in to emergency rooms or to clinics, come into the system that way, and then are registered on the back end. I think that, in my guess, is probably going to be much greater how we get these enrolled.
Commissioner Jessen.
Madam Chair, Representative, I probably should have been clear. We do not expect everyone to go through an online process. We recognize that there are a lot of people who are not able or not going to have access to a computer to do that. So we will still have the infrastructure we have today to help people, you know, with help people with assistance, over the phone help, take, you know, paper applications. We'll have all that. I think that my point is more, we're doing it all that way today. That even if we say that, you know, half of the people, and I think it'll be more than that, are able to do this online process, then that's a whole lot fewer, that's a lot less administrative burden for us, but we are still going to have people there to help the people who need it.
Thank you, Commissioner. You know, it just sort of occurs to me that we have this technology called the ATM. And when they first came out, it was, oh my gosh, I couldn't use that thing. I want to go talk to the teller. And now, many, many people, although not everybody, uses the ATM. So maybe we'll have something similar occur. So any other questions for the commissioner since we've got her up here again?
Madam Chair.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner Jessen, with regard to data practices and the Privacy Act, what assurances is the state and your department going to assure individual patients of the privacy information between their physician and themselves if this information is provided also to the federal database?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Representative, you know, I think there's a difference between the eligibility information, you know, which will go kind of through the verification at the federal level, eligibility, which will be just the income information mostly, as opposed to a lot of the, you know, doctor-patient, you know, information, you know, which is not, you know, I think the kind of automatic verification eligibility isn't going to be dealing with, you know, doctor-patient information. I mean, we're being very, we have very, you know, there's some of our programs that we want to, you know, for some categories of the Medicaid program, we do, you know, need to look at if you're eligible, if you're an individual with disabilities, you know, we need to look at some health-related information, but that's not going through this process. And we need to take a lot of care with that information.
Madam Chair.
Representative Albright.
Commissioner Jessen, it's my understanding under the current protocol, abortions are not funded by MA?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Representative, currently after the Gomez Supreme Court decision, in I think it was 1995, Medicaid does pay for certain abortions. That was a Supreme Court decision. It didn't before, you know, it only had covered a small amount before then. You know, I don't have that decision right here in front of me, but we do pay for those that were directed by the Supreme Court under that decision to pay for.
Okay.
Okay. Representative Franson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Commissioner Jessen, I'm very glad that Representative Albright brought up the question about abortion. As I recall reading the last abortion update from the DHS, that we are providing abortions from people that live outside the state of Minnesota.
Commissioner?
Madam Chair, Representative Franson, I'm not familiar with that, and I would say that a lot of the data collection on abortion information is actually handled through the Department of Health. They do surveys statewide. You know, we have information on what we pay for, but the broader description of what of abortions, I think, is a Department of Health matter.
Okay, thank you, Commissioner. Okay, we got a question from Representative Schoen. I know who you are.
Madam Chair, Commissioner, I think I've heard this brought up several times, and I think it maybe confuses the topic on data privacy. Is there any anything that part of the Affordable Care Act or the exchange that says when I go see my doctor because I'm not feeling well, those medical records will be transmitted to the federal government to some secret repository of sorts?
Commissioner?
Madam Chair, Representative, there's nothing like that in the Affordable Care Act, and we will continue to do everything we can to keep patient information confidential. That's a high priority for us.
Thank you.
Okay. Members, I'm going to move on. We have some other testifiers. I want to make sure we give them the opportunity, and then hopefully we'll have some more time for questions at the end. But I also do want to kind of keep us within the scope of this bill as well. So I know that this branches out into a lot of topics, but maybe we can get through the bill if we kind of bring it back a little bit. So welcome to the committee. Joel Euland, please introduce yourself and go ahead.
Great. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Joel Euland. I am the Assistant Director for Legislative Affairs at UCARE. I am also here on behalf of the Minnesota Council of Health Plans. I'm here to testify in support of House File 9. A couple of years ago, the Council of Health Plans was very proactive in supporting the expansion to 75% of the federal poverty guideline, and we're here again today to support the expansion to 138%. MA expansion will go a long way to reduce some of the healthcare disparities that we continue to see out in Minnesota. It will support some of the safety net providers that are out there, and will also provide better access to mental health services as well. One example that I would provide as to why House File 9 is needed is because it will help provide a benefit to Minnesotans, especially the ones who are enrolled in Minnesota Care. We see at UCARE a lot of times our staff will be working with our members who have avoided hospitalization or tried to avoid going to the hospital because of that $10,000 cap. And in doing so, they're avoiding other health care services and have ended up with much more expensive situations that have arisen because they were avoiding that care simply because of that $10,000 cap. The MA expansion will be very helpful because it will provide a better benefit set for the members so that way they can better access the services that they need at the time that they need it. Thank you.
Hey, thank you. Okay, not seeing any questions right now, we'll move on to Kate Johansson. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. As noted, my name is Kate Johansson, and I represent the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce and its 2,400 business members, which provide 500,000 jobs throughout the state. I appreciate the opportunity to testify in support of House File 9 today and also appreciate Representative Huntley's efforts in carrying this important legislation. The Chamber supports full expansion of Medicaid as contemplated by the ACA. Previous testifiers have done a fine job of articulating both the policy and fiscal benefits of this legislation, so out of respect for the committee's time, I won't restate those points, but I will simply distill them into the themes that underlie the Chamber's support for this legislation. Basically, that it provides better health for patients, a better budget for the state, and better business for the providers who deliver care to Minnesotans every day. I would also state that the Chamber has noted it would reevaluate its position in the event that federal funding was not available at promised levels and appreciate the bipartisan collaboration between Representative Huntley and Representative Abler on working on that issue. But for now, we hope we don't face that situation, and I would just like to let you know that the Chamber supports the legislation. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Albright.
Madam Chair, Chamber.
Ms. Johansson.
Madam Chair,
Representative Albright, go ahead.
From the Chamber's perspective, and given the financial, you know, acumen of your membership, what concerns do you have for the federal government to be able to provide funding to this program going forward?
Madam Chair and Representative, you know, that is an issue that the Chamber did discuss. And in its discussion of approving our policy in support of the Medicaid expansion, the underlying policy consideration that we had is that this is legislation that saves the state or reduces expenditures for the state hundreds of millions of dollars in the upcoming bienniums. Certainly, all federal programs that require federal and state funding partnerships are at risk of not being funded as federally promised, and that's why the Chamber did insert language into its policy statement that we would reevaluate in the event that federal funding was not provided. But at this point, because federal funding has been coming through as promised, we think it's appropriate to move forward with the expansion because it is a fiscal benefit to the state at this point, and that's something that the Chamber unanimously voted on.
Follow up? Oh, okay. Other questions? All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks. And we have Robert Freeman. Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon. Madam Chair, committee members, thank you very much for allowing us to speak today in favor of House File 9, the bill to expand Medicaid. For the record, my name is Robert Freeman, representing Health Partners. We're an integrated healthcare company with over 20,000 employees in Minnesota across our health plans, clinics, and hospitals, all devoted to our mission of improving the health of our members, patients, and the community. Because of our role as both a payer and a provider of care, we have a unique perspective on the issue of Medicaid expansion, which is why we've chosen to testify today. Health Partners strongly supports the Medicaid expansion. Our CEO, Mary Brainerd, was part of the Governor's Task Force and the Access Work Group, which recommended the expansion. And we thank Representative Huntley and also Representative Liebley, Loeffler, and Allen, who are also, I believe, co-authors. We support the expansion for three main reasons. First of all, we think it makes sense for patients. Currently, many people either have no access to health insurance or any limited benefits set with co-pays through Minnesota Care. This will help tens of thousands of Minnesotans gain the health security and access to health care services that you and I take for granted. It makes sense for our members. Without the expansion, many people would have to purchase health insurance they can ill afford through an exchange or other means, and we believe the expansion will also help keep down premiums in the rest of the commercial market. And finally, it makes sense for safety net providers like Health Partners. As an organization, we provided over almost $30 million in uncompensated care in 2011 and a similar amount last year. We were one of just four providers that stepped up to care for the former GAMC population after the state ended that program, and we lost millions of dollars doing so. This expansion will help leverage federal funding and help us alleviate some of those uncompensated care burdens. We do want to sound some cautions. This is certainly not a silver bullet. How health care is paid for is certainly going to change dramatically in the next few years with state and federal reforms, and coverage does not guarantee access 100%, especially with such low reimbursement rates for providers in Medicaid. But we do believe legislation is a great leap forward for our patients, our members, and the community, and we look forward to seeing it signed into law. So thank you for your time, and happy to answer.
Thank you. I'm not seeing any questions, so thank you. Is there anybody else in the audience who would like to testify on this bill? Please. Welcome to the committee, and just please give us your name.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Rod Halverson. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Social Service Association. And we're an association of about 3,300 human service professionals throughout the state. And a lot of the positive things that have been said I will not repeat today. I just wanted to share with you that Minnesota Social Service Association has a health care policy in general that is supported, that would support this bill. And so we would like to testify in favor of the bill.
Okay. Thank you. All right, no questions. Anyone else who would like to testify? Okay, any questions from members? Representative Huntley. I'm sorry, Representative Mack.
Sorry, Madam Chair, I was slow to the punch there. I'm not sure, Representative Huntley, if you're the best one for this or maybe research. Can you shed any light on the effect that the new accounting mechanism, the MAGI or Modified Adjusted Gross Income, what effect that's going to have on the average Minnesotan or people? Is that a far stretch from how it's currently calculated, or is there any information you can give us on what changes that results in?
Representative Huntley, do you want to answer, or do you want to phone a friend here?
Good answer.
Madam Chair, Representative Mack, that's something that I recently talked with the department staff about, and it's something I know that they are looking at. It's a sort of very complex topic when you're comparing modified adjusted gross income to the current Medicaid income methodology. I mean, there's some differences in what types of income are counted. There's some differences in the period during which you look at income, for example. There's some differences in maybe how household size is determined. But I think that's the topic. That work is still ongoing, so it might be better to wait till, say, the agency's analysis is done.
Okay. Other questions?
Madam Chair.
Representative Schumacher.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is just a process question for Representative Huntley. This is going to the Finance Committee next. Is that correct?
That's correct.
It's a motion?
Right. Okay. That's correct.
And Representative Huntley, do you know, are you planning to hold it over for inclusion in omnibus bill, or is it going to the floor?
Representative Huntley.
Madam Chair, and my intent is to try to get this passed as soon as possible, but it would, I believe it has to go through the Ways and Means because it does have financial implications.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you, Representative Schumacher. Representative Abler.
Yeah, Madam Chair, it does not hit the de minimis test. It saves $150 million or something, so the pesky Ways and Means anyway. I just wanted to thank the, I a couple things. I noticed that no one testified against. And I know the floor is open to them, and you offered, and nobody came. And I know there's some people that have concerns about this, and they chose not to testify. And I know we're respectful of those concerns, and some members expressed some of those concerns. I want to thank Chris Huntley for dealing with one of mine about the future of it, and if we can, continue to pay for all these good programs. A lot of us really care about the people who are less well off and need a chance to get care and get out of the hospital free, uncompensated care. So there's a lot of good things about this. And I plan to vote yes today. And I could see why a person would vote yes and why they might vote no. And the yes reasons are easy. It's nice to help people, and this will change some lives. Some people are concerned about the issues of abortions and issues about the cost and the federal government even paying their budget. So I hope that as members vote that no one will judge anybody either way by their motives for not caring about humanity, because we all do. But I thank you for a very good hearing, Madam Chair, and for a good discussion.
Thank you, Representative Abler. Other questions or comments before we vote? Okay, I think seeing none, Representative Huntley renews his motion that House File 9 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Health and Human Service Finance Committee. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed?
No.
The motion is adopted, and the bill passes. Congratulations, Representative Huntley.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members.
There's no further business before the committee, so we are adjourned.